Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
It doesn't get more intense than this moment.
Stand well back, everybody, because that is a different class from France.
Another kick from Ford. Little chip over the top. Where's this one bouncing? Oh, it's bouncing! England's way again!
McInally pounces! The opportunistic try from the former Scottish captain.
Sexton from outside the 10-metre line. It's spinning! It's spinning! Jonathan Sexton has made it!
Here goes Thomas Williams. Tipperick! Charge for the line! Oh, it's the perfect start to the second half.
To burn, they have numbers on it.
Okay, another Six Nations weekend is upon us very soon. Ireland team reconvened in Dublin at the High Performance Unit today. 36-man squad, no injuries over the weekend. Squad is largely unchanged, so no Jack Carty or Harry Byrne or John Cooney or Luke McGrath summoned. The drama seems to be over in France at the moment, where at last count, and obviously this is a very fluid situation, 10 players and 4 members of staff have tested positive for COVID-19. Replacements have been summoned. There's going to be testing every 24 hours this week with a view to training on Wednesday, so far from ideal preparation. The list of positives include the head coach Fabien Galthié, captain Charles Olivon, one of the latest players, Anton Dupont, Brice Doolin, Arthur Vincent, Julien Marchand, Gabin Villiers and Mohamed Haous in the front row. There's no concrete word on what that all means for the Scottish game in Paris on Sunday. There is obviously a fallow week next weekend, so it's not a disaster in the sense that they could potentially bump it back a week. It would mean 3 games in a row for the French and the Scots, but otherwise it seems workable. That's the latest from France. Ireland had a press conference today. Mike Catt, attack coach, was up before the press. He's been talked about, or certainly the Irish attack has been talked about a lot. And it was pretty much first question which came up to Mike Catt here. Have a listen, asked about the Irish attack and the lack of tries.
It's like anything, every team wants to score, you know, 4 or 5 tries every game. Everybody wants to go out and express themselves, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I think where we currently are, we firmly believe the way we're going is the right way. We probably could have scored 2 or 3 extra tries against Wales with 14 men with the opportunities that we created against France as well. So it's making sure at this level that the players understand you have to nail what you create, and we've obviously been pretty disappointed in terms of the finishing, but ultimately the players have got to get that right for this weekend.
Mike Catt there speaking this afternoon. If you missed Pro 14 results over the weekend, a clean sweep for the Irish provinces. Leinster beat the Dragons 35-29 away. Harry Byrne was at 10. Connacht beat Cardiff 32-17 at home. Munster beat Edinburgh at Murrayfield 22 points to 10, and Ulster winners as well, 19 points to 13 in Glasgow. Ireland play Italy on the Saturday at 2:15. Andy Dunn is with us to look ahead to it all. Andy, thanks for the time.
Thanks, Joe.
We'll come to Ireland in a moment. I mean, there is a degree of havoc now in the French camp. It sounds like it's currently just about the right side of manageable. The concern, obviously, over each 24-hour period is that this thing is out of control within the camp and there'll be more positives. The bubble has been well and truly burst, that much is for sure.
Yeah, it sounds... Well, perhaps it's something maybe only France could sustain. They played the Autumn Nations Cup, their last fixture against England, with a second string side and pushed England very close. Perhaps they are the only country within the Six Nations who could absorb 9 to 10 losses from week to week. But nonetheless, I'm sure it's a shock to the system for them.
The Irish squad, no great change. I know, and we'll get on to it, but I know you're hoping for more of a philosophical change as opposed to personnel. Was there any player or were there any players you were disappointed not to see included?
Yeah, I would have liked to see Jack Carty and or Harry Byrne even to be in around the environment. But then again, the environment has to be an environment that is looking to embrace what their skill set is. Otherwise, there's not a whole lot of point in just adding in new personnel to do a job that doesn't suit them either. So, yeah, in a perfect world, I would have liked to have seen a couple of changes like that. But I would rather see a shift in the approach as opposed to changes in personnel or. Yeah, I think overall I'd like to see small, obvious, practical changes in our attack rather than personnel changes per se.
Mm. So let's talk about the attack then. We can start in a number of places. What jumps out first of all is that if you look at possession and if you look at metres made, Ireland are winning in both games. So Ireland had 61% possession in Cardiff. They had 56% possession in France. They certainly by distance made more metres in Cardiff. And the territory relatively healthy as well. The French game, about 47% of the game was played between the Irish 22 and their own halfway line, which isn't ideal. But in the main, possession, metres made, all really, really positive and yet not amounting to much. What does that tell us about the modern game? Or has it always been thus in rugby?
No, it hasn't. It hasn't always been thus. I mean, if you look at the most successful ever super rugby franchise is Canterbury Crusaders. I've lost count of how many titles they've won. I think it's approximately 8-9 titles. Their entire operational system on the field is around having less possession and less territory than everyone else. So it's the complete reverse of what we do as an approach, and certainly what we've done in the Irish national team in the tail end of the Joe Schmidt era and certainly in the start of the Farrell era, is we've dominated possession and territory, I suppose, with very little outcome in terms of breaking down the opposition defences. It's difficult to... I mean, I watched... I had a laugh on Saturday night. I was watching The Voice. And there was a young singer on, absolutely butchering a Frank Sinatra classic, and it's the case of what you know, a young singer who will sing 11 notes where Frank Sinatra, it sufficed that they sang one. You know, Frank Sinatra song was over in 2 minutes, but I enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy the protracted version where this young pretender was trying to oversing or. My point, I suppose, being that 28 phases in the opposition 22 is not particularly entertaining and it's not effective. Mm. And I'd rather see one or two phases of rugby where we actually slice the team open, much like the French team did with us, with limited possession and limited territory in the either side of halftime the last day. I mean, we, at one stage in the French game, we had 71%. It was close to halftime. We had 71%. Possession and 70% territory. I was at the game and the live feed stats were coming in. Yet they had really created, well, they had created and converted their chance. We heard Mike Catt talk about questioning the finishing or execution of his players there. It seems a little harsh. I think that the one thing we created in the first half James Lowe made a bloody good attempt to finish it and got a foot in touch by about an inch. And perhaps that would have changed in terms of our approach. Maybe players would have felt more confident. But nonetheless, the overplaying of our hand, this persistent blunt force trauma approach, carrying it into the opposition, it's not something that I think is overly effective. It's certainly not efficient.
My interpretation of what Kat was talking about there, where he said we've created the opportunities and we just haven't taken them, I felt he was talking about the overlaps they had created out wide on a number of occasions. There's the, you know, all week, last week on Twitter, there were the shots of the kick off the stolen line out at the halfway line when there were players out wide. And there have been a few other examples where overlaps weren't taken out wide. I suspect that my interpretation of what Kat was referencing there was that.
Yeah, he may well have been. I think we could create a lot more. I'm not sure of the exact stats in terms of the meters per carry that we're making or the amount of offloads per carry that we're making. I mean, if we're making 100 carries in the last 10 games, I'm not sure how many are offloads. I know that we only offloaded 3 times in the French game and the French offloaded 11 times. And I think against very controlled and disciplined defences, the only answer at the moment in international rugby is to embrace that approach. To me, it's the only feasible answer to break down opposition defences.
Is it? Okay, well then we have a problem. If offloading culture and offloading in the DNA is the only way to break down the modern-day defence, we have a serious problem. France thus far in the competition, 1 offload per 9 carries. They are the leading lights. Wales, for instance, every 19 carries, they come up with an offload. Ireland, 1 offload per 54 carries. We are bottom of the table. We are dead last when it comes to offloading. So if offloading is the only feasible way to break down a defence, we have problems.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty startling number. I didn't even realise it was so far away from the opposition. I got a sense that it was, did you say 1 in 54?
Yeah, to France is 1 in 9 if they're the doyen.
Yeah, well, they're certainly the doyen in the Six Nations at the moment in terms of that type of play. That's a pretty startling number. I think... Yeah, I mean, I recently did a webinar interview for my home club's Old Belvedere, and they are, Ollie Campbell is one of the great former Irish players, a British Lion, and he's Old Belvedere recently named the club grounds Ollie Campbell Park. So it's like the mafia. Ollie's a very connected guy. And
I'd like to stress, for legal reasons, Ollie has no affiliation with the mafia.
No, Ollie has no links to the mafia, but he's a connected guy.
Yeah.
And he seems to be able to attract all kinds of stellar names to this series of Old Belvo webinars. And he recently got Joe Schmidt, no less, to do an interview with myself. So we did it. Joe was down in New Zealand. And he kindly gave up his early morning kind of pre-breakfast before he was going into a day's work. And there was about 100 club members on this webinar. But we spoke a little bit about this, because I think the tail end of Joe's career, the stats were very similar. And I brought up I grew up watching rugby videos, 101 great tries, and how much, I suppose, there was a lot of offloads happening in the 1970s and 80s. And I think Joe's view on it was that the 1970s and 1980s, the ball was alive for about 21 minutes in an 80-minute period. And modern rugby, the ball is alive for about 40 to 42 minutes. So, he said, which would you rather watch? And I didn't say anything on reflection. And it's easy to do it on reflection. My rebuttal would be, I suppose it goes back to that Frank Sinatra example. Would I rather watch 42 minutes of blunt force trauma and dross, or would I watch 20 minutes where there's 2 or 3 minutes, the ball is alive 20 minutes on in play, but there's 2 or 3 magical tries scored? And I think currently in that Irish system, one offload for every 54 carries probably sums up as perfectly as possible what the problem is in our attack. I mean, we will constantly revert to hitting runners to run directly into traffic in order to set up another play. Yeah. And while it reduces your risk in terms of losing possession, it increases your workload. It's labor intensive. I don't think it's particularly joyful to be a part of as a player, but then again, perhaps some of the players have become very accustomed to playing a system and doing their job. Yeah. And there's risk associated with going away from that, both as a coach and as a player. And there may not be a willingness to embrace that in the group, either from the coaching staff or the playing side or both. But I would love to see that shift in mentality. I'd love to see the coaches give the players a license to go off script and to embrace something like the offload, but to get away from that horrible statistic that shows us, I suppose, the inactivity of that side of our game.
But it's confusing because we keep hearing that this is a heads-up rugby mentality amongst the coaching staff, and that was what they announced when they came on board, and the players will tell you they've licensed to play, and yet we still have this, I mean, it's 2019-esque conservatism.
Yeah, well, there's a clear kind of a break in the circuitry there somewhere. Mm-hmm. If it is heads up rugby and the players have been given the license to do it, maybe the players haven't the confidence or the willingness to do it. Who knows? I mean, I know my own brief club coaching career. A lot of players, we played a game against Cork Constitution for Old Belvedere. I remember we won handsomely 48 points to 12 with a lot of offloads. But the overall feedback after in the weeks after the game, I can always remember as a coach being shocked, was the players felt there was a lack of control on the field. And there was. There was an absolute lack of control, but we won 48-11. Mm. But the players weren't comfortable with the lack of control. I think the modern player is coached possibly 5 days a week from the school system through from the age of 14 through to 18. And then the ones we see are the ones who've come through that system and got even more coaching from about 18 onwards. Mm. And they're not necessarily coached in skill improvement from year to year. They're often coached in their ability to be a part of a system, a cohesive part of a system, and understand different systems of play. And they'll certainly be coached on their effectiveness at the breakdown and how well they can jackal and ruck and steal. But their ability to offload is a trickier skill to be analytical with in terms of data. Mm. So it's often ignored. And I do think we've got a culture of professional players who may not embrace risk as a first choice. Who would like to break the line, take that risk? They have a risk of exposure. And you look at how much focus was put on Gary Ringrose's attempt to pass in the Welsh game, and then you throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's the risk.
I mean, in many ways, that attention to detail and the preparation is very commendable, you know, and these players want to do as well as they can. And so they've come from a culture under Schmidt where it was about prep work and hitting the laptops and knowing the set plays. By the way, those starter plays have just disappeared. You know, it's like we're doing all the blunt force trauma without even the starter plays anymore. But, you know, knowing your detail. And by its very nature, the world of offloading is reactive. And you used a phrase, you were chatting to Neil Tracy at the end of the French game at the Aviva Stadium. I'm not quoting you verbatim here, but you were saying not enough players were alive to the possibility of the moment. And you cited, for instance, Gibson Park and Lowe on the left-hand touchline, like a rare moment of spontaneity broke out. And it was almost as if the other 13 players were, you know, kind of stunned into just watching them. Like, let's see where this goes. As opposed to, you know, jouer, as, you know, Ron Nogara will talk about now, having been over in France. And like, what can I get on the end of? So where I'm getting to here is like the skill of offloading. You know, this is a skill set issue. And that skill set, I presume, applies to ball handling skills, the ability to run the right lines in support, to see the possibilities. We obviously have a bunch of players who are in their pod system and are trying to get into their next pod system and are, you know, still quite prescribed. So talk to us about all this, being alive to the moment, the way the French were in the build-up to their first try.
I heard a member hearing an interview a couple of years ago. It was a Paul Carrington interview, and it struck me because he said he needed to work harder at relaxing, which seemed such a contradiction in terms. And I always remember, similarly, around playing over in England in around 03, 04. And at that stage, the sheer volume, the number of coaches in the English nationals set up under Woodward, I suppose he was vindicated. He won a World Cup, but I think they had 31 players and 29 staff at that stage. And they had a peripheral vision coach, and they had, you know, we used to joke, had they a spontaneity coach. But the skill of offloading is, doubtless it is a skill, but is not a difficult skill for top players to adopt. I don't think it's something they even need to learn. I think what happens is they need to be given greater license to do it. I think that whatever way you phrase me, I can't remember what I said, but that being willingness to be alive to the moment it does not require the laptop. It does not require hours of video analysis or attention to detail. It requires game appreciation, and it requires a more subtle game awareness, and it requires an ability to take a risk as a player and a willingness to do that. I thought about my own period with whenever I got a chance to be involved in an offload type game. Probably the greatest example of it was the Leinster squad that had early 2000s under Matt Williams and Willie Anderson. And we weren't an offloading team. And in a pre-season from the 01 to 02 season, we worked on it for 6 weeks, and they gave us license to offload. In fact, they prioritized it over all the other prescriptive type plays. We still had the prescriptive type plays, but they prioritized the offload approach. And I think we went out in October that year, and back in the old days when you played Heineken Cup rugby in Donnybrook, and we put 40 points on Toulouse, beating them at their own game. And the reason that game stood out to me so much was because we didn't work on that skill to a level of expertise. We were given license to do it, and there was enough ability in the room. Mm. And actually, when you watch one YouTube video, you kind of crawl into the middle of it all. Next thing that I tried to see, was there anything on any footage of that game? But I ended up seeing the classic Leinster try from the 06 quarter final against Toulouse off the top of a line out, where the ball was taken down past the Contepomi, and he fed it inside to Horgan. And Horgan broke through, passed out of the tackle back to Contepomi, who sidestepped the fullback and one handed while he was falling, just left the ball up midair, and O'Driscoll ran onto it like a rocket and scored under the post. I can guarantee you it wasn't a prescribed play, but it required O'Driscoll, for example, to change his support line, anticipate that Felipe might be able to do that offload. And then there was just this connection, this, I don't know how you describe it, unconscious play. And it is there within, I think with all top players, it is there when you get the weights lifted off your shoulder. But it requires the coaching team to give them that license, or to prioritize it in training, as in, you know, do what we do, not what we say. If you talk about giving license to play heads up rugby, but practice all week running through patterns, the likelihood is it's not going to transfer on to Saturday. So there is a disconnect for sure somewhere, and I don't know where it is. We can only speculate. But if there is a heads-up approach, it's not transferring onto the game. And that could be within the delivery of the message. It could be within the playing group that are not comfortable giving it a go under the stress of an intense international environment.
And look, we haven't touched even on defence. There's a lot of areas for Ireland to improve. But on this attack discussion, which is primarily what we're trying to have, Are we in danger of oversimplifying this here? Like, a few offloads and a hey, we're away. Is it like, is that what we're saying?
No, because like then this argument I've had with many, and I've had it from coaches who are, you know, Jedi level five, whatever they talk about, say, you know, if you don't have an understanding of the intricacies of the environment, then you can't just oversimplify. That to me is a derogation of duty, actually. It's harder to do something that's not measurable. It's harder to encourage players to flourish and allow them to do what comes naturally than it is to be data-driven and very safe. And I think the argument that, you know, we just keep playing the way we're doing, it's too simple to offload. There's no subtlety to that in action. Like, we need to change. And it's not happening at the moment. I hope there's an awareness within the group that we need to change, but it's not an oversimplification to say a couple of offloads will transform our game. It will. It will transform. It transformed the result against France because France did it twice. That's, I'm not talking about basketball. I'm talking about an improved skill set or an improved ability to execute an offload. I know when Jerry Flannery, I think Jerry Flannery, I spoke to after he went on a coaching journey with Felix Jones back when they were assistants with Munster. And I remember Jerry saying he was a little embarrassed. He felt a little intimidated going into the environment, thinking I'll have to be very prepared here for what they do in New Zealand because they're clearly so successful. And he came away a little embarrassed by the simplicity of it. Mm. Because what they weren't doing was attention to detail on 16 phases. They were doing the polar opposite. They were encouraging players to express themselves. And the quote I heard personally, I had a coffee, I remember, with Steve Hansen in 2014. I've often brought this up on this show. Mm. Is he said, if we don't know what we're going to do, the opposition definitely don't. And he laughed. And that's, to me, as simple as it gets. If you have a skill set or a playing group that is armed with the skills that are required to break down the opposition defense, it's very much harder to defend.
Yeah. Well, I guess, I mean, even if we got from one offload in 54 carries down to one in 20.
Yes.
And so exactly. would you consider Leinster an offloading team, by the way?
Not at the moment, no.
Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily either. I mean, they're methodical and they can beat teams up front increasingly, especially in the Pro 14 and the lesser teams in Europe. But they ain't to lose either, you know. It's not like you can say, oh, I think people still think of the early Schmidt years at Leinster and that champagne rugby and feel like Leinster have played that ever since. Whereas it doesn't, they don't.
Yeah, it's always been a very interesting question. Is the style with which Leinster played under the early Schmidt years was very different to the style Schmidt adopted with Ireland. But there was always attention to detail with the early Schmidt years, same as there was at the tail end. But what there wasn't at the tail end was the ability to break down defences through non-typical play or through unpredictable play. Mm. The current Leinster setup, they are very capable of grinding the clock down and exhaustive phase play rugby. Mm. And, you know, just, I suppose, breaking down opposition through relentlessness as opposed to imagination at times. And it was interesting. Ulster scored a beautiful offload-based try on the weekend against Glasgow. And it was, I think it involved Madigan, McCluskey, Cooney, and the fullback who finished it. But it was Mike Lowry, sorry, I just couldn't remember the surname there. But it was a really nicely constructed try.
Yeah, they scored a few really nice tries like that this year.
Yeah. And the other example I can think of in very, very recent history is Harlequins over in the Premiership, who have, I think, scored 145 points since their coach, Paul Gustard, since they parted company. And they've got a young out-half in Marcus Smith, who is, I think, Austin Healy described yesterday as world-class. And for that reason, won't be included in Eddie Jones' Six Nations squad. So you take from that what you will, but this old mantra that we saw in sport, beware of the maverick or be suspicious of someone who'll do something that's different. I think that there's an element of that going on in rugby, in Northern Hemisphere rugby in particular, excluding France. It's something that is embraced and has been embraced for many years now down in the best team in the world and their culture in New Zealand.
So I guess I want to get a sense of how concerned you are. For instance, Stuart Barnes in the Sunday Times yesterday. In their days as England coaches, Farrell and Mike Catt were not renowned for fresh, invigorating thinking. Rather, they found their path and hammered away until it became increasingly aimless and blunt. Later on, he said, I'm unsure whether Farrell and Catt are the right men for Ireland. I get the sense, listening to various podcasts over the past week, and people are not going to come out and call for heads, and that would be a ridiculous thing to do, especially this early in the tenure and Paul O'Connell's making an impact. But I'm sensing concerns, actually. You know, there's a real jury is out at the moment sense of where this coaching ticket is at. Where are you?
I think the change required in terms of how we play is not significant. If you break down what are the strengths in our game currently, we won 17 lineouts out of 17 against France, which is again very reassuring, and that's clearly the influence of Paul O'Connell's arrival. Yeah. And we similarly, I think the real side of where we saw Paul's intervention was we stole three of the French. We were very disruptive, and that was really pleasing to see that aggressive approach at the set piece. I think our scrum looked very solid against the French, and they're obviously a renowned scrummaging side, and William Servat is coaching them, and John Fogarty is doing a very good job in building a strong Irish scrum, and there's a little bit of depth coming through there in terms of our scrummaging forwards. We've got a great attitude. We are in terms of work rate. If you ask players to do what we're asking them and they keep turning up and they keep doing it, it has to be applauded.
Yeah.
Because it shows such a willingness to fight. It shows courage. It doesn't show a lot of imagination, but that's not their fault necessarily. But so I think if you look at pillars of your game, you know, a good attitude in the group, good set piece, good coaching of the set piece. And from what I gather, and I don't know Andy Farrell, but he'd a stellar career with exposure to multiple environments, which surely means he can draw on a vast amount of experience with different coaches and different, you know, British Lions squads under Gatland. And Gatland, again, is another proponent of under delivery in terms of detail. He doesn't deliver heavy on detail. He allows some of his coaches to do that, but his job is to get the best out of individuals and encourage and cajole. And there's a lot of skill to that, as well as to be the CEO of the group. And hopefully, in Mike Catt, I hope there is. It's interesting to hear what Stewie Barnes has written there. I mean, Mike Catt's playing career, he was a hugely difficult player to play against. He was a handful every time I played against him, because I genuinely, you'd have no idea what was coming next. And I'd love to see if that just transferred into his coaching to some degree, that there's a risk in allowing players express themselves or whatever language we use, because you run the risk of saying you're low on detail. And in fact, I think it's the opposite. I think you can be high on detail around how to express yourself as well, and you can have a far better end result. So no, I'm certainly not at this stage worried or in any way feeling that there's huge pressure. I don't think there ought to be. Mm. But what would be really difficult is that if we went through a Six Nations campaign halfway through a World Cup cycle and there's no change in the approach. I think it's very, very clear at this stage that the approach now that we've stuck with this for 2018 and won a Grand Slam, but everyone at that stage, it was very obvious what we were trying to do. It was shut down, we stuck with it. It was shut down again and again, we stuck with it. We changed coach, we stuck with it. We had poor performances, we stuck with it. We're now halfway into the next Six Nations. We're sticking with the same style of play. I would be worried if we get to the end of the Six Nations and there's no discernible change in that approach, because it shows that we're not learning. Mm. And that's where I'd be concerned.
Mm. Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team, Team of Us, everyone in. Final word, it's Italy on Saturday, 2:15. Even on not great days, Ireland offload against Italy. You know, so clearly, like, quality of opposition comes into this. If we don't see a bit more zip and a bit more creativity and a bit more spontaneity this Saturday, we certainly aren't going to see it at Murrayfield or against England in Dublin. So there's actually, I mean, they're going to beat Italy because that's where Italy are. But in many respects, go off the back of your last answer about what you want to see at the end of the Six Nations, this is actually a real bellwether game. Like, let's see if there's an effort now to move things along against inferior opposition where, you know, there's a bit more latitude. So, like, geez, if we're talking here next week and it was more the same, then your non-concern becomes concern.
Yeah, I think in a nutshell, yeah. I mean, it would be great. And let's try and quantify what we're looking for. I'm talking about seeing this once or twice in 80 minutes.
Okay.
Done well.
Okay.
I'm talking about reducing our possession to that disastrous, ghastly stat that you read out at the start. 1 in 54 possessions results in an offload. That's horrific. It's an absolutely horrific stat. And what I'm talking about is an improvement on that, which is, I don't think, is asking for too much. And I don't think it's suggesting we become the Harlem Globetrotters. And I don't think it suggests we lose attention to detail. I think it suggests we show a bit of courage. And I think it suggests we show some imagination. And yes, I would be deeply worried if we don't see some of it against a inferior Italian side.
Okay. Andy Dunn, as ever, a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Joe.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.